On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
My very special guest today on the bookshelf is a longtime friend of mine. This is a man I admire very much. If I want to know anything about politics in Alabama, this is the guy that I look to for answers. But I'm not the only one. Steve Flowers has become a remarkable resource for the state of Alabama. Someone who grew up in Troy, always loved politics, worked as a page first, then became a politician, then became a senior commentator. And his newspaper column, his radio shows occurred across the state, television shows. When an election comes on, Steve is the guy that all the TV stations want to help analyze the elections. And so I'm very proud to have Steve Flowers here with us today. And he's got a brand new book from a local publisher, New South Books. They're out of Montgomery, Alabama. The book is Of Goats and Governors, Six Decades of Colorful Alabama Political Stories. Probably if you are a regular listener to WTBF Radio, you've surely heard Steve talking a little bit about his book. But today we're going to talk specifically about these incredible stories that he experienced or learned from the hands of the people who told them. Steve, welcome to On the Bookshelf.
Well, Doc, thanks for having me. I appreciate you and appreciate your friendship over the years. And you and Becky are special friends, and you're quite an attribute to all of our area here. And I love being on WTBF. I grew up listening to the morning show when I was a little boy with Pappy Talbot. And, you know, it's my home. You know, I come up periodically on the morning show, and I just love WTBF. And it's just, like I say, it's just home. I grew up, you know, next door to Joe Gilchrist over on Maple Street.
On Maple Street.
And then I used to caddish Mr. Asa. Now I know Jim well. And watch Jim grow up on the TBF radio show, you know, in the morning.
Right.
With Pappy Talbot. And so anyway, I'm at home here, and I appreciate you taking time to read the book and have me on the show. You know, Doc, this book really came up, the purpose of the book. And I wrote the thing about 3 years ago, actually, in New South, and I played with it for a couple of years and added a few things here and there. And, you know, I've been around this stuff, as you mentioned, all my life, and I'm now 63 years old, and I started paging up there when I was 12 years old in the legislature. And therefore, you know, I've been around it 50 years. There's people like me around the state, some of them in the arena, some of them not, some of them in business, but we've all grown up in this stuff, and we've heard these stories about Big Jim Folsom, George Wallace, Howell Heffin. Of course, as far as those last two, George Wallace and Howell Heffin, I actually knew them very well. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of personal stories about them in the book, as you know from having read the book. But I wanted these stories told. I really started out by wanting to tell stories about Wallace and Big Jim, because the South is a unique area in a lot of different ways. But during the era I try to capture, the era of Alabama and Southern politics was so interesting, and I contend that it was so colorful, and our characters were so colorful because they were our entertainment. You know, and every state had some of the same vestiges of populism and and gregariousness and homespun rural, based on getting the rural vote.
Right.
You know, because most people in the South lived in the rural areas, and they related to a candidate who could relate to them in a rural way.
Sure.
Mississippi had Bilbo.
Right.
Louisiana had probably the king of the whole thing, the kingfish, Huey Long.
Right.
So they, you know, Huey Long probably is a bigger character than anybody in all that lore. But South Carolina had Pitchfork Ben Tillman and later Strom Thurmond. Georgia had just almost as good as anybody in the Talmadges.
Yeah.
The Talmadges of Georgia. And actually, some of the colloquialisms that Big Jim would use was actually taken from the Talmadges. You know, he would say, I'm going to steal a little bit. But what people would laugh about Big Jim on the stump would say, yeah, I'm going to steal some, you know, but I ain't going to steal as much as the rest of them. But really what he was saying, he'd look at the farmer there with his overalls on the court square, and he'd say, I'm going to steal because I'm going to steal for you. I'm going to steal to build you roads. I'm going to steal to build you, you know, to get your crops to the farm
right.
off the thing. And so, you know, that was the reason he was saying that. But I believe I'd stack Big Jim up against anybody as far as gregariousness and uninhibited.
Yeah.
You know, if you put the word uninhibited in a dictionary, you'd put Big Jim's picture back. I mean, he was totally uninhibited. One of the best ones that I tell groups when I speak to them about my own political history that always gets the most guffaws and laughs, and just people start dying laughing because they can envision it. It depicts his uninhibited manner, and I'll tell it quickly. Big Jim had a penchant for alcohol, as you know, and I go into the book. And,
right.
And he, second term, he would stay pretty inebriated a lot of the time, and he loved to go to Mobile with his drinking buddies down there. But the American Textile Manufacturers Association was meeting in Montgomery. It wasn't in the state, it was national, because Alabama and all the southern states were real textile places.
Right.
You know, if you take any town around our area, the Brundage Shirt Factory was the biggest employer in our area. Alitex was the biggest, one of the biggest employers in Troy.
Right.
Right down, you know, on Brundage Street. And remember, when we were little, half your neighbors worked at Alitex or the Brundage Shirt Factory. Andalusia, any other town had big textile. So we were big textile industry. So someone had written Big Jim a speech. He had not seen the speech. The troopers drove him fast to Montgomery. He drove in, and someone handed him a speech as he got ready to give it. And he got to read it. It was full of statistics. And Big Jim says, "I want to welcome you all to Alabama today." He said, "We got 400,000 people employed in the textile industry. It means $6 million a day to our economy. One out of every six people is employed." He said, "I'll be doggone. I didn't know that." He said, "Well, I'll be doggone, I didn't know that." You know, people love to hear that. But he was just so inhibited. He would just do things. But he loved people. And, you know, he loved to get out and campaign. And I remember that era when they'd come to the square here in Troy, and Wiles would come with Big Jim. Had a band called the Strawberry Pickers. And he would have a suds bucket. He'd sweep the stage, and he'd dance with his band. And he sang the song, "Y'all Come." He said, "Y'all come to see us now and then." You probably heard it because you played on radio. He'd sing, and they'd sing "I Fly Away" every time. You know, everybody sang "I Fly Away." The band would sing, it was gospel music. And one time, one of the stories in the book gets around right here in Troy. George Wallace had a momentum going, and he could afford Minnie Pearl. People in Dothan and Ozark had been treated to Minnie Pearl by Wallace Riley. And the folks in Troy were going to have a really big Chamber of Commerce rally with all the candidates coming in.
Yeah.
And Wallace, they said, "Well, Wallace, we know you got, you know, you had Minnie Pearl come to Dothan and Ozark, and we'd like to have her come to Troy, too, you know. We've got a big thing." And Minnie Pearl in that era, Doc, cost $5,000.
Good
in that
night.
Era. So they had, that was how they spent a lot of their campaign money.
Yeah.
You know, bringing these entertainers in for the country bands and everything. And Wallace got on the phone, and his people called her up there in Nashville, and her husband was her agent,
mm-hmm.
and he came with her. They got down here. McDowell Lee told me this story. McDowell Lee, the longtime Secretary of the Senate, was Wallace's first campaign manager. Both of them were from Clow over in Barton County. And Wallace had no idea about money. Mm-hmm. Money didn't mean anything to him. He didn't have money personally, didn't want any money personally. He just wanted to run for governor.
Right.
So he got Minnie Pearl down here, and time came to pay her. And Wallace didn't have $5,000. He looked over there at McDowell Lee and says, "He'll pay you." And McDowell Lee had to go to the Troy Bank and Trust Company and get his money from wire from his Clyde Bank over here to pay Minnie Pearl. Wallace just didn't care about money. But he got Minnie Pearl here, and they carried Pike County. But I'm getting into too many of the stories. You probably
No, that's what makes the book so interesting, is hearing these stories. I didn't come to Alabama till the fall of 73. So a lot of these kind of things occurred in this area before I got here. And so it's fun to hear about them. And one of the stories that I loved in the book was that George Wallace just loved to run for office. He liked winning, of course, but apparently he just ran all the time. And we were talking before the interview started about his remarkable ability to remember the names of people that he met casually once, and years later, he'd remember that person, know them not only by sight, but remember their name and be able to ask about their mama or their wife and their kids and everything. What an incredible memory.
You're right. Like I told you, a lot of people around the state have told these stories throughout the years. I know one that I had heard from somebody in Geneva, and this will tell you how remarkable his memory was. And I've told civic groups when I walk in there, there could be 150, 200 people I'm speaking to, I said, "George Wallace had the memory that if he walked in here and met every one of y'all one time, 5 years later, he'd call you by your first name." Can you imagine that? The story was, I'll tell you, is in the book, I think, Geneva County Commissioner was going up to see Wallace about a road project in mm-hmm. Wallace's first term. You can imagine, Doc, how many people you would meet in a statewide campaign going to 8 or 10 rallies a day. And
right.
If Wallace was running 58, he ran again in 62. He lost to John Patterson in 58, his first race. So you can imagine how many people you meet. And so, therefore, the the commissioner asked his best friend, says, Doc, you want to ride me to Montgomery to see the governor? And see, I'd like to do that. The county commissioner could have been prompted. Wallace would know the county commissioner's name. His secretary would say, this is Commissioner Joe Smith. And therefore, you know, but he didn't know Doc Kirby was coming with him.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, so he wasn't prompted on that.
Right.
So they walk in the governor's office, and Wallace speaks to the commissioner. Joe, how you doing? Good to see you. I've been looking forward to visiting with you. Joe said, I want you to meet my friend Doc. He said, I know Doc. I met him in 1958 at a fish fry in Simpson. How's your wife Becky doing? That's the kind of memory he had.
Yeah.
And I've heard those stories repeatedly. Now, one that Wallace told on himself, though, is in the book. It's so funny. And he said, because people say, you've got a remarkable memory for names. He knew he did. But he was campaigning on a square one time and shaking hands with the crowd after the van and speech. And he saw his little boy and said, how's your daddy? The boy said, my dad's dead. Sorry. Moved on, spoke about 50 or 100 people. Walked back around the square, the little boy was still there. Wallace spoke to him again, said, how's your daddy? The boy said, he's still dead. Wallace didn't remember kids as well as he did adults, but he'd tell that one. I tell you, one of the most colorful characters in the book, and I had a call from a guy from Tuscaloosa last night who just read the book, and he says, I love the Heflin section. You know, Heflin was a colorful, colorful guy.
Yes.
Had the best wits you've ever seen. And like a lot of our leaders statewide, I don't know if I've written this in the book, but I've observed it over the year. For some reason, the Baptist denomination is larger than the Methodist denomination, but our political leaders have come from the Methodist Church.
Right. I was amazed at how many of them in the book had been Methodists.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
Every one of them. But Howell Heflin was the son of a Methodist minister. Very prominent Methodist minister in North Alabama. Had pastored churches throughout North Alabama, and Heflin had grown up being the son of a Methodist minister, and he was always a little bit worried about the fact that his daddy had actually been sent over to Georgia while Heflin was born.
Right.
And Heflin would always say, yeah, you know, my daddy was over there in Georgia doing missionary work among the heathen. And one time the press, you know, the pillar of journalistic sanctity is the National Enquirer, you know.
Yeah.
Everything you read there is by
it's
all made up.
Yes.
And so one time they had actually put in there the name three U.S. senators who were space aliens, and they made call Heflin a space alien. And the press, the actual real press, came up to him and says, what do you think about the National Enquirer calling you a space alien? He said, I always knew my mama was heaven sent.
Nice.
Well, he came and said, I always knew my mom was heaven sent. But one this guy liked was old John Warner, was a U.S. Senator from Virginia.
Right.
During the time that Heflin was a U.S. Senator from Alabama, they both were on the Armed Service Committee. And Heflin liked old Warner. They traveled over to Europe for a big military thing over there, and all the commandants of Europe were there. And Warner and Heflin were asked to speak, and as senior senators on the Armed Service Committee, Warner got up and took a especially long time. But, you know, John Warner had been married to Elizabeth Taylor.
Right.
He was one of her 10 husbands.
Right.
But he wasn't married to her then, but he had been married to her for a time. And Heflin had recognized that Warner had taken a long time with his speech. And he says, in a southern drawl, said, well, I'm not going to take very long. I just want to tell you, like Elizabeth Taylor told John Warner, I'm not going to keep you very long. But he had all kind of witty, humorous. He was a senior senator on the he was chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. And for our area of the state, Doc, he actually single-handedly saved the peanut program. He single-handedly saved the peanut program for years.
Wow.
He was able to keep the peanut program going for our region. And so he was real liked by the peanut farmers. But I know you got other questions. I didn't mean to get off on those stories.
Oh, no. This is the story. I mean, the book is Of Goats and Governors, Six Decades of Colorful Alabama Political Stories by Steve Flowers from New South Books. It's available everywhere. And you can also go to their website, newsouthbooks.com, if you want to order it directly from them. You mentioned, kind of in passing there, that Governor Wallace ran for office in 58 and was unsuccessful, but that wasn't a big surprise for him. A couple of political terms that I learned from reading your book, and one of them, the friends and neighbors politics. And that makes sense because people want to buy a car from somebody they know, and they want to vote for somebody they know.
It is so dominant. I'm glad you brought that out. It's sort of an inside politics thing, and political scientists talk about it. The South is well known for what's called friends and neighbors politics. But Alabama has the most pronounced of any state in the South. And Dr. V.O. Key, who was the most renowned political scientist in American history, brought that fact out in Political History of the Deep South. He wrote Bible of Alabama Southern Politics, still used in every major university in the South. And it talks about the friends and neighbors politics. And it continues today. I sat there on TV the night of the election in 2010, and I tried to explain that. You got such a short time on television to explain friends right. and neighbors. I smiled. I said, V.O. Key would be so impressed. It's still going on. Because you can look at boxes in the 2010 governor's race. And the reason Robert Bentley got in the governor's runoff with Bradley Byrne and ultimately beat him and edged Tim James out of that race was because of friends and neighbors politics. He ran, to use a Southern term or colloquialism, he ran like a scalded dog through Tuscaloosa, Fayette, Lamar, and Pickens County, 85% of the vote.
Yeah.
Against five opponents. It happens continuously. And the saying I tell Southern political classes that it is so pronounced that if a guy's from their neck of the woods, they'll vote for him. Because yeah. he's our guy.
Right.
You know, we're liable to know him. If I need somebody, I at least know who he is. And they may know him very intimately because he's been around their neighborhood a while. As they say, I know old so-and-so's a crook and a drunk, but he's our crook or drunk. You know, by gosh, so I ain't going to vote for somebody from North Alabama. So you can see it continuously. Bentley won the governor's race.
Yeah.
Because of friends and neighbors politics. Now, he was well-liked in Tuscaloosa.
Now, it doesn't happen so much now because of television, and you bring this out in the book, but back in the days when Wallace ran the first time against Patterson and so forth, there was a phrase that you used.
Get acquainted race.
The get acquainted race. And uh-huh. I love that, and it makes such sense because if you're in an era when you can't just get on television, everybody and instantly sees your face. Uh-huh. If you're going to take advantage of the friends and neighbors politics, people have to know you. And if you're not from there, you better get there. And it doesn't matter if you don't win the first time because the
guy before you had won.
Yeah.
It worked that way because the governor couldn't succeed himself. You see, that's why it worked. See, nowadays, I was telling someone at lunch yesterday, they're talking about who might run for governor in 2018. Nowadays, you can succeed yourself. They're probably going to be governor for 8 years. But that back then, you could not succeed yourself. So what you would do is you'd run and get acquainted. If you ran second, you were the man to beat. It happened repeatedly in every race for almost 60 years.
That is so
interesting. You could go back 60 years, and everybody who ran second would win the governor's race.
They were the heir apparent for the next time around.
Now, they had to keep working at it.
Yeah.
Wallace worked at it.
Yeah.
Like the day John Patterson beat him, he said, I got outsegged and I'll never get outsegged again. Patterson beat him with a race issue in 50. Yeah. It became a prevalent issue. And Wallace won with that issue in 62. He realized that was the issue.
Right.
You know, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. You know, and so 62, he ran on that issue. But he also never quit running.
Yeah.
He never quit. He campaigned 4 years, so he was going to be hard to beat.
To me, Wallace is one of the more interesting characters in American politics. He starts out as more or less a moderate. He grew up poor in Clio, around poor white people and poor black people. He'd ride around with his dad fishing and going to the store. He knew all kinds of folks. Been a probate judge. Then he runs for governor, more or less as a social moderate. And he realizes he's not going to get elected here. Whether it's right or not, he's not going to get elected that way. So the next time he runs as a segregationist, he's in like Flynn.
Yeah.
When I got here, now, of course, he had run for president and the assassination attempt had put him in the wheelchair. And so he's back in the governor's office. So
he was a political animal. He was a total political. He really was. He was a politician. I called him a political animal. Phrase for him. Whatever it took, he was going to win. Constant politician, and he did. He knew that full-time governor, Ahab, was kind of hurting him.
Yeah.
But he went around to everybody. He came back, and he played the race card, and he also begged for forgiveness. He says, you know, I've been running for president. I shouldn't be doing this. And if y'all would just let me go, that's all I want to do. He was going to get beat because of that in 74.
Yeah.
The bullet ruined his life, but it saved his political life.
Yeah.
Because the sympathy vote for him after that bullet was so bad that the three B's were going to run against him in 74, Brewer, Baxley, and Beasley. So you had two of the best races. The publisher of New South, Randall Williams, he made this about governors, and I had not made it, but I went in and talked about every governor's race for him. He says, and so what I do in this book is I analyze the inside of every governor's race.
Right.
The two best governor's races in state history were the 1970 race between Brewer and Wallace. And there were other candidates in the race. Charles Woods ran, which put it in the runoff. But the 78 governor's race, where Fob James came out of nowhere and beat the three B's, Brewer, Baxley, and Beasley,
right,
was one of the best comeback stories I've ever seen in my life, or one come from behind.
Yeah.
I mean, come out of nowhere and win. So the two best governor's races, and I mentioned this in the book, are the 70 and 78 governor's races. Classics. I mean, and I analyzed that race in the book, and the name Goats and Governors is the right, well, I didn't give it that name. Randall gave it the name Goats and Governors, which I'm glad he did, because it's been very catchy.
Yeah.
It's very catchy. I was going to name it a mundane Alabama political stories. He said,
right.
He said, that's what it is, but let's spice it up a little bit.
Right. And right. So, well, that was a good decision, because the stories aren't boring either. I mean, the stories are fun and exciting and interesting. And I remember I was at TBF in 78 and got to interview Fob James.
Did you see it coming?
Not at first. Now, when I first interviewed Fob James, I thought, this is a nice fella, but he's going to get killed. These other guys, everybody knows, even I knew who they were. He's going to get killed. And plus, he's from Auburn, and it seems like almost everybody who's been governor graduated from Alabama. And you talk about the machine in Alabama. And I thought, oh, well, he's a nice fella, but, you know, it's not going to happen. But when that firefight started among all those guys.
When Fob James came out of nowhere in 78 and beat Brewer, Baxley, and Beasley. And then in 86, that would be a third best race, because Graddock and Baxley had a fisticuff in the Democrat. I'm not talking about the gloves were off.
Yeah,
it was as tough a fight. I mean, they personally didn't like each other.
Yeah.
And so it was like they really went after it, and it was almost a dead heat. Graddock got the most votes, but the Democratic Party went behind closed doors and picked Baxley.
Yeah.
And that kind of rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah.
That
rubbed
anybody the wrong way.
Yeah,
they should have realized that was the most arrogant, flagrant move.
Dumb.
I mean, people said, I ain't voting for that guy. So that changed that, and Hunt was the first Republican governor. Hadn't changed since then.
Right. Now, when Fob James, did he win because he just kept stumping, or
no? What happened in that race? What was so amazing was, and this is when television and media and radio became so important. There was a media genius in Memphis named DeLoss Walker. He had had the history, Doc, of going to every Southern state. He was 7-0. He had taken every unknown candidate. He had taken Dale Bumpers in Arkansas, who was a simple school board member, and elected him governor of Arkansas. He had gone through the entire South and became a media genius. He took a media. He knew how to design ads. Well, Fob James had just sold his barbell factory over in Auburn, Opelika. He and his brother Cal James had built one of the biggest businesses in the state. It was a barbell manufacturing company called Diversified Products. Had 5,000 people employed in Opelika. It was the biggest employer in Opelika and Lee County, bigger than Auburn University, and also bigger than that Goodyear plant over there. So it was the biggest employer. They sold out for no telling how many millions of dollars to Sears, bought them out.
Ah.
So Fob wakes up. He's still a young man, 45 years old. He's built a business and sold it for jillions of dollars, and he said, well, I think I'll just run for governor. So he went to Lawrence Walker. He had $1 million in his hand. Said, I'll give you $1 million if you'll let me governor of Alabama. And Lawrence Walker didn't want to blemish his record. He knew, like you did, that Brewer, Baxley, and Beasley, you got three guys who've been running for governor for 12 years. Brewer's already been governor once.
Right.
He's been lieutenant governor. And Baxley's been lieutenant governor, attorney general. Jerry Beasley has been lieutenant governor 8 years. You got three guys who are sitting there, can raise all the money they want. And Fob, you're going to get lost. I can't win with you.
Right.
And Fob prevailed on him. Finally, Walker said, well, even if I lose, I've made $1 million. If the guy wants to throw me $1 million, I'll just do it, you know.
Yeah.
So he took Fob. But he made him come to Memphis and go to school with him for about a month. Made him live with him. Taught him how to be interviewed. He taught him how to answer questions. But what he basically told him is, don't say anything. Because if you listen to a proven politician running for president who's been coached, if you ask them any question, they won't answer that question.
Oh, right.
They'll answer what they want to say. So I said, the issue is about get back to reading, writing, and arithmetic. So you ask Fob any question, he'd stay to the script. Well, here's Baxley, Beasley, and Brewer here just beating each other up. And I say in the book, you almost think that they, they've killed each other's mother in a bar fight. Yes. It's just like, I mean, you think these three people have gotten so bad that the fobs up here riding around in a school bus acting real nice, and people started saying, well, I don't want to vote for those three guys. Something's wrong with every one of them. You know, this was stealing money here. This was killing his mother. You know, they didn't say anything about each other, you know. And so saying all that stuff about it. And so finally, Baxter got to the point where he would say, you know, that old guy, old Fob James, really a good guy. He'd make a good governor. And lo and behold, Baxter gets in a runoff with Fob, and what's he going to say? I mean, he's on a runoff and say, Fob killed Baxter in a runoff. So that was a good race. I mean, so we go into governor's races, and the name Goats and Governors was derived from the reason Goat Hill.
Yeah.
And we go into little things like that. I explain why Goat Hill is called Goat Hill. Why Buck's Pockets, Buck Pocket? Why is a mule day? And I mean, there are old things about Alabama history and politics that I've told that are dying by the wayside. There used to be a famous thing that every politician would go to the first Monday trade day up in Scottsboro. It was a legendary thing that people would go to. There was a Terry Fanner Union. There's a county up in, talking about friends and neighbors politics, there's a county up there, Lawrence County, near the Tennessee line, that half the people in that county are kin to the Terrys. They're all Terrys. I mean, half the people in the county are all kin to each other. You know, that's where the people in the north get to thinking everybody in the south marries a cousin. Well, they probably do it in that county. they wouldn't be kin to each other.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the truth.
So they've gotten kind of clannish up there in Lawrence County. And, you know, a lot of those newspapers in North Alabama, I'm in 66 newspapers now, but a lot of those counties, Marshall County is one of them, that won't allow any outside columnists in their papers. They only have local people write about farming or something like that. They're that provincial.
Yeah.
Still today. Yeah. You know, they don't want to join the rest of the world. They live in another area, and they say this is our area. It's like our people. It goes back to their friends and neighbors.
Yep.
They'll say, we're going to vote for the guy from our neck of the woods. But there are things in the book I wanted told like that, those stories about my politics.
It's just a treasure trove. I am glad that you put the stories in about Howell Heflin and John Sparkman and Lester Hill and some of these other great figures from Alabama politics that served in the House, served in the Senate. Alabama is just a wonderful, wonderful place. If you love politics, this is a great place to live. And Steve, you've done a terrific job in putting together all these great stories in your book. And I know if you didn't get every story that you know in this book, and I'm sure you didn't, I know that there's room for another format in another book sometime.
Funny you say that, because what this book has actually prompted is I'm getting calls from around the state for guys my age and older who lived during these eras. And they've shared newer stories, more stories about Big Jim Wallace that I hadn't even thought about.
Oh,
you know, and they're people that I need. I thought, well, this guy himself would make a colorful character.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you can't get everything in there.
Yeah.
You know, and so they've heard some other stories I hadn't even heard.
Oh, cool.
You know, so Jim Maine on the Supreme Court called me and they says, I've got one you ain't heard on Big Jim. So, you know, their story is still out there, hadn't been told yet, but I tried to get as many as I could in there.
Well, there's some great stories, and we could talk for a couple of hours and not get them all covered. I want to thank you, Steve, and maybe we'll just do another show couple months later, and we'll just cover some of those other stories.
Let's do it a couple months.
That sounds cool.
We'll go into some of the stories. We'll look at them again and kind of think about something we need to tell.
All right, very good.
Oh, do we have time to tell them when the book signing is going to be?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I've got some book signings set up, and if they want to mark it on the calendar, I'll be there to sign the books, and they can buy them. They're on sale now at the Johnson Arts Center.
Okay.
And I've donated some to the Arts Center here in Troy that they can come down and get some now, and the Arts Center will make the profit off of them. But after the first official book signing will be on Thursday, September the 10th, at the Johnson Arts Center, the old post office building, downtown Troy, from 5 to 7. If they can't make that the following day on September the 11th, on a Friday, I'll be at the Troy Library from 12 to 2. And then later on that afternoon, from 3 to 5, I'll be at the Brundage Library. And the following 2 weeks, I'll be in Enterprise, at the Enterprise Library on September 17th from 5 to 7. I'll be at the Ozark Library on September 18th from 12 to 2. I'll be in Laverne on the 23rd of September, 12 to 2, and I'll be in Greenville at the High Horse Gallery on the 22nd. Anyway, the Troy one starts September the 10th. We're going to be on a pretty extensive book tour September and October.
This is kind of an example of friends and neighbors, isn't it? You're going around seeing your friends and
neighbors. Well, that's my readerships in the rural areas.
Thank you so much for being a good friend to me and Becky and to our area, to WTBF listeners, and we'll do this again real soon.
I like that. Thanks, Doc.
My friend Steve Flower is our guest today on The Bookshelf. His new book, Of Goats and Governor, Six Decades of Colorful Alabama Political Stories. It's from New South Books. It's available everywhere. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.